Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series. Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. As always, I am grateful for your participation tonight, those of you who will join us, and we are always grateful for those who have over the years. We're looking forward to having our regular callers to call us, our co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller, Chicago, Jacksonville, Florida, St. Louis, perhaps Chicago, Illinois, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Wherever you are, feel free to give us a call here. That number to call in the studio is 657-383-0944. If you're following us live on Facebook, you could post your questions or comments there, but we would love to engage you directly in conversation in the podcast studio. So give us a call again. That number is 657-383-0944. All right? A close look at practices in what's called political science may reveal just what methods and controls that are used to keep a major segment, particularly young folk, 18 to 35 years old, brand new voters and fairly new voters. These are members of the American electorate. Strategies are developed to keep them essentially ill-informed, unaware, and easily manipulated. This is done through a process of polling and inquiry and surveying, and intended to do so for the sake of winning elections, not necessarily to meet their needs. So join me tonight on Talk Straight as we get into this. We explain the political science behind what we see in terms of a lot of agitation, a lot of violence, a lot of friction and frustration across the United States today. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're talking from the topic, political science. What's behind my destruction? Political science, what's behind my destruction? We do have a topic tonight. So for those of you who have been following us, you know we're going to go right into our monologue. If you're new to the show, bear with me. Next 10, 15 minutes as I give context for our conversation around the topic, political science. What's behind my destruction? you may disagree with the assertion there or the understatement, the undertone, and that will make for good conversation tonight, all right? It's May 17th, 2022. And we are grateful again for you to join us, 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. Psalms 141:19 reads like this. Keep me from the snares which have laid for me, the gins of the workers of iniquity. Keep me from the snares they have laid for me, the gins of the workers of iniquity. Political science is defined as branch of knowledge that deals with system of government. And it involves the analysis of political activity and engagement with human behavior. We talk about a campaign, a particular political campaign, or any sort of campaign, really. It's a body of work that is organized in a way that is active toward a political goal. Typically, we're talking about political race or even an awareness campaign of some sort, but it has a social context to it. Now, since 1870, both of the two major political parties in America have boasted over what they've done for particularly the African-American voters. The Republican Party, rightfully, pretends that they have freed slaves. They brought rights of citizenship and voting rights to Negroes. That's true. That can be found in the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and the 15th Amendment. The Democratic Party pretends that they are responsible for offering blacks or Negroes such American opportunities we see today as integrated education, renewed civil and voting rights, affirmative action, and even access to public welfare and housing. That can also be true. Over the last 60-plus years or better, one party more than the other has used their claim of love and direct support as a leverage in political campaigns, specifically to garner votes from African-American voters. Well, yes, career politicians have analyzed the social habits and even the emotional triggers of not only minority populations, but they went further, and they broke it down by age, by interest groups, right? And they did this in order to organize campaign strategies, as I just described to you, that will manipulate them, touch their heartstrings, and drive them emotionally, stimulate them to vote in a certain way. There's a pattern of voting out of emotionalism for many, as opposed to real awareness of the issues of the facts, right? Opposed to being organized in an approach to examine candidates' issues and who's best to represent you in a particular political race, right? As opposed to you determining what agenda you will engage, as opposed to allowing someone else to determine that for you. All right? Now consider how elements of science are used in political campaigns. And again, the point of this is that career politicians, and I'm going to try to make a distinction between what a politician and an advocate, I should say, is. All right? They both have something in common, and that's the people. And they use strategic methods to pull at the social behaviors of the people. Consider step one, professional politicians, they pay close attention, and they even pay companies to conduct polls, test people's tensions and feelings and ideas at a given time. They use this to make observations about their social habits and their interests, right? And they look for individuals who they know are of a certain age, who either are registered or need to get registered in order for them to get them to vote for them. So they use the observation that's in the scientific method. Now, based on what has been documented through their observation, these professional politicians, their campaigns form questions related to how to best manipulate, get the support of these particular voters. So they're constantly watching every cycle. And let me just be clear. I'm not saying this is one of the major policy parties, or that both of them are doing this. One has perfected it quite well, particularly when it comes to engaging the African-American population. So they form questions after making observations. They form what is called a hypothesis, which is the basis of making a prediction about certain behavior, certain interests, certain outcomes, ultimately who's going to vote for us. Form them a hypothesis. Then after forming these predictions about these voters and their patterns, these professional politicians seek to test their assumptions, put it to the test. Different groups. They will avoid one group, though, being careful not to even them, because they know they've already made up in their mind based on their hypothesis, their assumptions, right? They're not going to fool with us. So they're not going to reach out to you. They're not going to even offer you anything. Are you with me? See, and interestingly enough, when you're running for office, you're supposed to represent everybody. But stay with me. So they test this thing out. And then what they do is develop what's called empirical data from the previous steps, the political activists or campaigners are able to gather what is called this empirical data. This further helps them to manipulate the voting and the collection of votes based on geography, interest, and even affiliation to certain things. Okay? This is not necessarily bad solely for the intent to get your vote and not to hear your voice. That's the problem. Okay? That leads into the sixth step, which is the theory that they form about you. After completing these previous five steps, then what they do is they form a working theory that you're going to do certain things. Some of them have gotten it down to where it's quite predictable. What we're seeing is an anomalous trend to where many of these people that have been placed in some theoretical framework are moving outside of that. They're realizing, you know what? The gig is up. I see what's going on now. And I see you will figure out just what I want to hear time and time again and leave me high and dry. We're not doing that no more. Now, I want to, from a song, this fella called himself T.I., just highlight some things he said in one particular song. Now, I play this song for the sake of communication and understanding, because in many ways, it is reflective of the mindset of this population I just mentioned to you, 18 to 35 African-American voters. Not everyone, but a large swath of them. Across the United States of America. It says, you heard things about me from friends and family, claiming you understand what I'm interested in. And I'm paraphrasing him. I'm a graduate of my social environment, the streets. You will make me go off on society because you don't know me. If you continue to make assumptions, I'll strike out at you. If you think I'm afraid, confront the police, you don't know me. I'm reaching out for my vote because you don't know me. My good friend and our co-host, which I hope will be joined us, Pastor Ricky Waller, on page 84 of his first book, Still High, said this, quote, "I thank God for you in advance and for what a day brings forth. It could bring forth change." That's the good news right there, that a day could bring forth change. Listen to how T.I. said it, and we go straight to our phone line, 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. Facebook, give us a call. If you listen to us from the podcast platform, give us a call there in the studio. We got two callers already. We're going right to you. This is Talk Straight. You listen to conversation relative to political science. What's behind my destruction? I apologize in advance. I apologize. But go ahead. Go ahead.
And this society right now, nobody knows. It's like, you go to a next door neighbor, and you don't know if they about to, get a gun, or
wow,
they about to hug you.
That is so true, Josh. That is so true, man. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Let me. You own something now.
That's pretty much what I was saying. It's like you don't know nowadays if you if they about to put a gun on you or they about to hug you.
Yeah. Is that's troubling, isn't it, Josh? To live in a society and a community where you're apprehensive about your neighbor, people that share the same space with you, man. And maybe this is not everybody. Maybe everybody's not like that. Maybe we're wrong. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944. Correct us if we're wrong. But, Josh, I think you may be on to something. There's an apprehension the last few years that you don't know how to trust what people are going to do. Pastor Wall, is that your assessment? I'm just curious.
Well, you never know. I mean, as you were saying, you know, there was a time when you can go to your next door neighbor with an excitement.
Right.
Because you know that you were sent to go there for a purpose. And so even though when you knock on the door, they don't come to the door, they say, come on in.
You're right, right. They just say, come on in.
Yeah, that was a time.
Wow.
But now.
Wow.
You know, you might have a little bit of a different approach to that. So, yeah. It's
well, and Pastor, I was just going to chime in with what you were saying. It used to be a time where neighbors were comfortable enough to have an idea about you, to know it was safe to tell you to just come on in. Now people are afraid to even, you know, answer the door, period, without their Ring cameras.
That's right. Trying to look out there, see who got there.
The Ring is not even enough now.
How do we get there, guys? How do we get there? I've got three questions I'd like to try to get answered before we end the show tonight. But how do we get to that point, you all, that, Pastor, you probably can't bring the most wisdom than all of us here tonight. But how do we get to that point where, I don't even want to use a phrase, but you got to question people now. I'm talking about kinfolk now. Talking about your family now. Some of your family you got to look outside their head, cockeyed, you know. How do we get to that point? Anybody?
Oh. Again, with the rearing and the raising of children is changing. Morals are like being thrown out of the window in a lot of cases. I had a good friend of mine was telling me about an incident where he went away to the military, and he's from the city of Chicago, and he did 5 years, come back to try to visit a childhood friend, you know, in a project is where he grew up. And that friend wound up pulling the gun on him and robbing him for his tennis shoes and jacket. You know, that's he was saying. He was just thinking the whole thing was a joke. Like, are you for real? Are you serious? Yes, he was serious. But, yeah, times change because, again, parenting is changing. Morals is, like, not there. It seemed like often, you know, how could you do that to somebody you grew up with? Like, I mean, to anybody, but especially somebody, you know, I don't know. So, yeah.
Okay. the story is told about a day and time when a character named Job was bringing his son to go before the presence of the Lord. And he was met by two entities. Yeah. And these entities had a conversation, Josh, a dialogue with one another, right? And one entity asked the other, hey, man, where you going? Where you going and where you coming from? He said, you know me. You know what I do. You know how I get down. I'm walking to and fro seeking who I can mess up. I'm looking for him. And the other entity said, hey, man, look, leave them other people alone. I got a man who can withstand your stuff. Well, yeah, drop it like this. Huh? I mean, who you got? Are you with me? Now, I would submit to you all, Pastor Waller puts it, he phrased it in the words of a trap, that there are individuals who are seeking, when they see you, it's not because they genuinely love or appreciate or value you, but they want some out of you. Have I got a witness? We're talking from the topic of political science. What's behind my destruction? And I would submit to you all, and I'm going to leave open the floor, that this drive that they have is what leads to people looking at one another and thinking, Pastor Waller, everybody on the take. I can't trust nobody. Because I'm hungry and they hungry. And I know if I was hungry, Josh, I'd cut them. I'd clip them. Am I wrong, Josh? Talk to me, Josh. Talk to me, Josh. Help me out now. Don't let me go to hell, Josh.
He going to hell with that thought. Talk about he'd clip him. What? He on his way with gasoline underwear on.
Wait a minute, man. Don't let me go down there.
Hey, there was a time where your neighbors were your friends.
In
my time, there was a time your neighbors were friends, kinfolk.
Kinfolk.
This time has changed.
What's brought that change, Josh? What do you think has brought that change? You heard what I was saying about this conversation. Somebody is walking back and forth.
All of these collapses that people are doing in the streets and stuff like that. People going to jail more, and all this stuff, it carries something on you.
It does have a weight in on you, doesn't it, Josh? Yeah. I have to agree with that. So let me ask you this, 72. Jack Mill.
Yeah.
What correlation do you see there between people and how they act and respond and those individuals who are lightweighting, looking to find a reason to trigger their actions? See what I mean? You know, anybody can respond out of fight or flight if you get up on them too fast, too close, you understand, you start with them. But there are people who are literally waiting to try to see how they might be able to capture you. What correlation do you think there is between that interest and what you see with people doing destructively today?
Honestly, I don't know because I don't think like that. I mean, I'd like to try the calm, cool, work it out. Can we talk it out? Can we compromise? I like to go that. I don't know why other people are just so easily drawn to violence, and I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
Let
me ask you this: if you got hungry,
is it?
Go ahead, Josh.
The violence and more violent that we have each day.
Mm-hmm.
Violence doesn't solve problems.
It does not.
So
no, sir.
It actually does the opposite.
Yeah. I concur.
So
yeah.
It doesn't solve the problem, it hurts it. So if you can't solve problems hurting yourself, hurting other people, hurting these people that you think you love and now you hate, or you don't know if you like or hate, that is not the wise thing to do.
Yep.
That's
you
why
know,
we defend this individual.
That's true. Josh, I grew up in a time, and I know Pastor Wallace can relate to this, when you got into a disagreement with somebody on the street, you may have had a few heated words, and y'all may have threw a few blows. But you get on up, man, you walk it off, and the next day y'all giving one tap again. Pastor, you remember those days? You remember those days, Pastor?
Yeah, they were called the good old days.
You know,
you can do that.
You're going to sweat it. Yeah, you're going to get back to that, don't
you? Yeah, you can do it.
But I have noticed time that what has happened, and, you know, everybody thought they could box fast. Everybody thought they were Bruce Lee and Jim Kelly, right? Everybody, you know what I mean? Everybody thought they were martial artists and what have you. Even if they couldn't do nothing, they thought they were Muhammad Ali or Joe Frazier or somebody, George Foreman or somebody. But over time, young guys have become more and more timid and fretful of even having dialogue or argument with one another. And the first thing they've learned to do is to grab a weapon to resolve the conflict. Not talk about it, but to eliminate the threat immediately. You see what I mean? And I find that to be quite interesting, that people have gotten to a point now where there is little communication. You can't talk to folk no more. I shouldn't say everybody, but in many places.
Pastor Godfrey, you said young guys. It's not just the young guys. It's people now as a whole in general, even older people. Okay,
you've
been blessed and fortunate enough to get a carrier's permit and all that. The first chance they get, because I have this now, I'm going to pull a gun out. Maybe they don't intend to shoot, but I want to make this person be less and stand down. And, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah, and see, when you pull a gun, you went there already. See what I mean?
Exactly.
You went there already.
Exactly.
And it's hard to come back from there. Hard to come back from
that's
there.
That's right.
And you may not really mean to go there. But when
that's
you pull
right.
it, hey, it's on like Donkey Kong now. We got to get it.
That's
we got
right.
to get it.
Because the other person may have a gun, too, and they don't know what that's you're trying to do. You may be right. So what, are they going to stand and just wait to get shot? No.
Yeah.
They're going to start shooting, too, and there you go. Innocent bystanders getting killed and hurt and all a bunch of foolishness over somebody pulling in front of someone else on the freeway or on the street. That's crazy.
Point well taken, point well taken. I got what appears to be a new caller here, area code 323, last four digits, 6606. Looks like Los Angeles, California is tuning in with you. Listen to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery. We're talking from the topic political science. What's behind my destruction? I know that topic comes with some assumptions. But caller, welcome. Question or comment thus far?
Can you hear me? I doubt it.
Yes, sir. I can hear you. I can hear
you
loud and clear.
Okay.
Yes.
I came here because in your description page you were writing about the political manipulations and the methods that are being used to do so. So I wanted to find out what all those methods, those that you haven't described already, I'd like to know what they are.
All right. I covered those in my monologue, and I described how political science is applied to analyze people, to observe them, and to see how they tick. I'm paraphrasing and summarizing it. Actually also pointed out the fact that both of the two major parties use them, right? They're not necessarily bad, but it's the motive behind it. And what one party has perfected the idea of dividing people by interests, by race, by gender, by class, and things of that nature, and to pit all of them one against the other, and to cause all of them to feel as though they need someone to come and to protect them. That's a brief description of how I suggested in my monologue that political science is used to go after votes. Now, in the end, all these professional politicians are interested in is your vote. They're really not interested in your quality of life or whether or not you can get along with your neighbors anymore. After they come in your neighborhood, stir stuff up, right? That thing stinking. They gone. Go ahead, I'm sorry. That's how I define the divisiveness and some of the tactics that are used.
All right, so I wasn't here for the monologue, and like I said, if there are methods that you haven't talked about yet, I mean actual methods that do what you're describing, I'd like to know and hear and be informed about that.
Okay. I tell you what, we're welcoming St. Louis into the show. Let me just for a second go back and to rehash some parts of the monologue, and I won't stay there long, but we will come back to it so that we engage in the rest of the conversation. One of them is what they do is they pay close attention using pollsters, and people poll what's popular, right? And in certain areas, particularly geographic locations, what drives people out. Business people do this too when they sell in the product. It's part of marketing, right? They use that, and basically, as people respond to certain stimulus or nudge or suggestion, they're able to develop questions about what will make them respond differently and so forth and so on, and they develop a hypothesis, right, a theory around, how much of this can they take? And if I were to put the next man over there in the same situation, stimulate them, get them all worked up, would they come together with them or would be opposite of their interests? And I hope that's answering your question to some degree. Those are just some of the samples of it. 6606.
Well, you said polls, and then something about influence. So I don't know what you mean. How they nudge.
So, for instance, I come in your neighborhood, right? And I take, let's say that you have 2,000 people in a four-block radius. I'm just giving a number out there. And I come and I reach about 500 of those 2,000 people, okay? And I wine and dine them with a thought, an idea, and I make them feel special. And I suggest to them, you know what, y'all better than the rest of this 1,500. And in fact, the rest of the 1,500 should do like y'all say. Y'all should organize and label yourself and make the others feel as though if they don't come along with you all, something's wrong with them. Are you following where I'm going, 66?
Mm-hmm.
6606, you with me?
Yeah, I'm putting myself on mute so that I don't interfere with what you're saying. So it takes a while for me to unmute.
Okay, I understand.
So you've got an influencer. Well, so far, yeah. I understand that you're going to have somebody who has an intention there of trying to influence a certain amount of people. Okay.
But for the sake of getting them to persuade them to vote a certain way. Now, that would be okay if their interests were peer, right, and that they were truly interested in the 2,000. But they're really only interested in dividing them so that they can conquer all of them. That's the point. And this is what we've seen historically, what I call professional politicians do. And I'm going to make a distinction later on in the show from them and an advocate for people. The political process is there, and Black's Law Dictionary says that by definition, as a citizen, you are a member of a political community. We can't get around that. Okay, that's just the nature of our structure, our society. However, when you have individuals only have the intention of manipulation for their own personal gain and power and control, that's where the problem comes in. That's where the problem comes in. Let me stand by for a second. Let me welcome St. Louis to the discussion. We have Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Jacksonville, Florida, in with us, our co-host, Pastor Rowland, right here in Nashville. And Los Angeles has been gracious enough to join us here on this May 17th, 2022. St. Louis, question, comment thus far?
Well, my phone was ringing off the hook telling me that Joe was on here. So he's a nice guy. I've been knowing him for a long time. He's an excellent person. He'd give you the socks off his feet. But I was just listening.
Don't listen to him. He doesn't know me that well. I'm not giving anybody the socks off my head.
They can't have him, my Joe. Okay, all right.
No.
Okay, but all right. Well, let's bring the rest of it. So, Joshua, you're a young man, and right now a hot issue that's going on right now across the country is for people to – there's some that are looking for people to be riled up, tied up, just like they was in 2008 with the idea of hope and change, right? And then we had another cycle where there was a dominant thought and emotional drive where people were looking toward making America great again, right? Here we are now, and there are different people looking to stir you up, to get you all fired up, man, get you wet and anxious because they want you to do something. And then in the end, what do you think going to happen, Josh? If you fall for the bait, what do you think?
You said the trio, for one thing. So,
okay.
Way back, that was different part of the season, as I will call it.
Okay.
And at that part, we didn't know as much stuff as we know now.
Hmm. Okay. So what's the difference then? What's the difference, though? Is there a difference?
I would say yes, because if we know better, we should act and claim things and see it better.
I see. Okay, I'm going to give you a good example. Current event, Josh, and the rest of the panel. Current event. I understand past week or last week it was. Three middle schoolers in the Wisconsin area were engaging in dialogue, social engagement and dialogue in their classroom. One of them identifies themselves now as non-binary, okay? And the school district has a rule now that you have to call them by whatever pronoun they desire or you're offending them. Well, the child that they were offended went to the teacher and the principal and said that they were being sexually harassed because the male refused to call them by another pronoun. And the male's other friend said, hey, what's the problem? You know, you got a right to say that, blah, blah, blah. Well, they were all charged, believe it or not, with sexual harassment based on Title IX. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around it. These are middle school students who should be focused on reading, on writing and math and science, and being able to compete with China and the rest of the world. Here they are caught up in this hotbed social battle. What? Mm-hmm. And it's grown folks that stirred this mess up. Do you see where I'm coming mm-hmm. from now? Y'all see where I'm coming from? And this is one of the reasons you can't get any. people can't trust one another. Young children are learning to be divisive and to be divided. And over what? Help me with that 3072. Come on, chime in here.
Well, I agree with you that, yeah, we are teaching the young to be divisive and quite dividing. But over what? Somebody else's personal. That's personal. What you think
right.
you are. So if I think I'm beautiful and I look like a baboon, okay, that's my opinion of myself, and yours is your opinion. Who am I to say right, that's foolishness and also kind of crazy to a certain extent.
Right.
I only can
right.
call you what I see you as what's been recognized for since the beginning of time. A male is a male, and a female is a female. I'm not trying to be, or they're not trying to be disrespectful or anything, but we've taught them this even. We've
right.
taught them how to identify boys and girls apart. So now you're trying to restructure everything to suit certain people, and that's not right. I don't agree with that at all. And, yeah,
you know,
it's sending the wrong message out, I feel like.
And, you know, if these were adults, that would be one thing. But we're talking about young children who are still trying to identify themselves.
That's right. You
know what I mean? And that's the real danger here, I believe. Because adults can do what they want to. They have social
right.
clubs and places
yeah.
they can hook up and do whatever they want to. And that's your business. Because I don't know of a law in America against it, but when a school system basically puts itself in the position to control one's right to speak and to think and to express, that becomes troubling. But, and again, the real issue here for me is the fact that young children are caught up in this, and that's what bothers me.
And like you said, it's contributing to the rest of all the chaos going on in the world today. It's a contributing
factor.
All right. Go ahead. See, here's the big problem. People, quote unquote, parents let this stuff go on. Ain't no school system supposed to separate your authority over your child.
Agreed.
To any policy.
Agreed.
There's a couple of things that need to be done in these school districts, in these states. One, they need to implement recall of school board members. Don't wait till the election time come up. No, recall them and get rid of them next week. Then you're supposed to tell the school district what it is that you want your children to be taught. It shouldn't be up to the superintendent. It shouldn't be up to the principal or a teacher or some specialized group. That is your child. You pay for that school district. Another point, states should tell the federal government to go to heck. And this is the critical thing. The federal government gets its powers from the state.
Correct.
Well,
hear me.
But St. Louis, how do they do that? Do we just start pulling our children from the schools?
If necessary, yes.
You might have to.
Better yet, get rid of those school board members.
So, 72, I agree with St. Louis. The best approach is to hold those people in position of policymaking and authority and on the school board accountable to do what they should in the interest of educating all children. See what I'm saying?
Well, I agree, but that's the second approach, because those people have been put in there and they're going to serve terms. So what is the immediate?
Right. What he's telling you is they don't have to stay there the full term. Most places, there's a recall. There's a recall. Not in every place, but in most places, there's a recall. There's a process to recall them. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's saying. And
let me tell you something
right.
else you can do. Then you want to also petition for school choice with vouchers, where you can put your child where it
there
suits
you
your educational outcomes and goals. That
right.
is what you should be doing. Another thing to get back, is to have your child independently evaluated and see if the child is doing the work that is said they are doing on their report. If they're not, then you make their school district pay for the remedial type of tutoring and education that's needed in order to bring your child up to where they say they should be. If it's sixth grade and they're doing fourth grade work, then that's an issue.
Sure.
Okay. Now, and I was going to just say that, you know, he and I, we on here, but we don't agree on a lot. But I agree with him totally on that. But a lot of people don't know that. They don't know where to go or how to start or, you know. And I'm sure that most people would not be in agreement with this non-binary and, no, Jimmy, you have to call James a girl because that's what he thinks he wants to be. No, most people don't agree with that. But because they don't know the avenues to take or what help is out there or their rights even, they're just stuck.
Well, I was going to say St. Louis. In Tennessee, I don't know if they have that in other states, but we have what's called the Tennessee, right, the blueprint for learning, and it breaks down the curriculum of what the standards are and what the measurements of evaluation are for each standard that should be taught on a grade, age or grade appropriate level, right? And to your point, and I think this is what 37 was saying too, most people are just not aware to even look for that. And it's a big issue. It's a real big issue. So,
well, that's why you need to have choice. If you got a child that come from a home where the parents have taken the time to teach them the preliminaries that they need to go to perform at their grade level, and your child is the only one, so your child is being held back by everybody else. That is a cardinal sin. You should be able to take your child out of there and put them where they should be. Why would you leave your child where they're being held back? That don't make any sense. Your child is only going to be that age one time in life. One time in life.
I'll tell you, as a former public school teacher, I do think there is a place for public school construct. Unfortunately, politics, the politicization of the educational process have really tainted it. Please know that it's not teachers that are driving a lot of this. It's not teachers that are driving this. Most of the teachers I knew, their hearts were in their job, and they gave more than what they were getting back. And they really wanted to see things. Their hands were tied by the bureaucracy of politics and the school board, what have you. When it comes down to determining what kind of textbook, somebody's pockets are deep enough to pay for people to be on the board, and they're going to, you understand what I'm saying? And they're going to choose the textbooks, even subject matter in textbooks that are perhaps not appropriate or not really important. You understand what I'm saying? This whole notion of encouraging people because you are of a minority group, somebody needs to pacify you and make it easier for you not to be accountable to learn the logical processes of math and master them. Master them and demonstrate them before you move to the next level. You talk about big talk of low expectations. Those are real conversations we can have, and we don't have to do it, Josh, with a knife at one another's throat. But you got to realize that there are people, politicians, who are pushing this agenda on the smallest level. People don't realize why they can't trust one another. Why are you looking at somebody's brains? You understand? This lady was walking past me, and she was looking at me. I didn't have a mask. He did. I wanted to tell her, take that mask off so I could see your pretty face. Give me a hug, doggone it.
She don't want to. She don't, and that's her right. But she don't want you to see her.
It is. No, I didn't bother. I just want to tell her, look, girl, let me see that pretty face. Yeah,
no, but I know what you're saying. You're right. You're right. We are getting so comfortable now with just being so reclusive, even to where, we can't. We don't know. We all know. If you're happy, you're sad, you're mad, what?
And if I could judge from my eyes, I would say that you probably didn't want that friction to be that apparent friction. You know, I just spoke and I tried to give a kind word and what have you. Keep it moving, you know. But go ahead, Taylor. Go ahead.
That there's another problem. See, parents should demand out of the school district that certain subjects and topics are taught to students, in particular biology, in particular the sciences. If more of the adult public today had that type of teaching and mastering when they was in grade school, they wouldn't be walking around with these masks on because they'd know exactly what they call themselves trying to protect themselves from. Does not just enter the way that they are putting masks on. It could come through your eyeballs.
Sure.
It wouldn't be. Sure. See, people are easily bamboozled when they are miseducated and ill-educated.
And that's
a fact.
That's true. And professional politicians bank on that. They want you to be ill-informed. In fact, 80-some% St. Louis of the American electorate is. And this, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but they're just ill-informed to the real issues relative to the voting process. I mean, in a number of things.
And as I said before, there's government that needs to be taught, history that needs to be taught. And I reiterate once again, the states control the federal government. They give the federal government the powers that it have. Other than that the federal government has mischievously assigned themselves. You have to take that back. And who takes it back? It's the people of the states that make their legislature do what you want them to do. That's all what it's all about. There's no such thing as federal land. Hang on for a second. There's no such thing as federal land. As I've said many times. Show me in the Constitution where the Constitution allowed a federal government to own land. There's no place other than forts.
Hey, St. Louis, it's the Commerce Clause that's often...
No. The Commerce Clause is not the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution do not allow the federal government to own land.
I get what you're saying.
It does not. Other than forts. Like the TV series F-Truth, those type of forts, which was needed when the settlement of the Western frontier was going on.
Okay. All right. Josh was trying to respond to you, Sandler. What were you going to say, Josh?
Really, though, even if we had... all of that, a lot of us, don't even want it in the first place. A lot of us are like, go to school, I'll talk to you, soon. Bye-bye. Love you.
So you're saying they're too hands-off.
Don't even want this stuff in the first place.
Okay. Let me see, what were you trying to say right quickly before I...
Well, I was going to agree with Josh, and that's not for all parents, but I think that's what he was alluding to, that there are quite a few parents that do just look at putting all the responsibility in the educational department. No, you should not do that. Because, again, do you want your child, and I'm now talking about this non-binary and children being taught that homosexuality or lesbianism is the way to go if that's what they think they want. I disagree, totally, highly disagree with that. But again, when your hands are a hands-off approach, that's exactly what's destined to happen. That's what's going to happen because they haven't been given a chance to grow up and develop into who they know that they are or to know what they want or any. All they've been doing is being guided by someone who the parents approved to guide them in most senses, and the parents not even realizing they're guiding them in the wrong way or in a way that they don't even agree with. Because it's like you said, okay, bye, love you, see you later.
So suppose, 72, I'm someone who believes in that idea and I want my children to be able to identify themselves as they choose, and you and I are talking. We both share a classroom.
Yeah.
To have that conversation amicably. You understand what I'm saying? Where's the middle road for us, in your view? Where's the middle road? Or is there a middle road?
You said you're someone who what?
I'm a parent who think my children should be able to identify their gender as something other than what biologically they were born.
Oh, okay. Then maybe I honestly would just recommend you to get counseling even, or to revisit some psychology even, or I mean to understand the study of life and growth even, seriously. Because how could a child know anything at 9, at 7, at 12, at 14, at 16 even?
Yes.
They can't know if you are guiding and directing them into that.
Let me ask you, okay, calm down for a second. So that's your position. I have a different position.
Okay.
But I have a different
Let me tell you my position.
Okay, St. Louis. 1 second, St. Louis. But our children, St. Louis, you're in the same classroom. Our children share the same classroom, same teacher, same resources, and they're supposed to be getting the same instruction and lesson. How do we as parents agree to go amicably? Let me hear from you, St. Louis. Talk to him. What's your position?
I tell you, you take your child out of that environment. Simple.
There you go.
You take your child out of that environment and don't let your children play with those kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
If you got kids that come from a school where they from a household where they practice and teach satanic verses, so you want your child playing with them. So this stuff about everybody is the same. You got to keep everybody in one environment. It's totally a bunch of hogwash.
And it's not to be mean, but it is because I realize that my child, as a child, is very impressionable. And I do not want you to get the wrong impression, the wrong idea, or to be something then brainwashed into you that is supposed to be real that is not, which is just what people are choosing. And, again, at the rightful age to me of 21 to 25, that's sad. I would hate for you to go that route. But if at least you're an adult then, you have a chance.
Am I hearing you guys suggest?
They are almost barely adult.
Well, I'm hearing you guys suggest that there is no negotiating. There is no conversation.
There isn't. They're not for me and my children. I'm sorry. No, sorry. And that's not to be mean again. And if my child became friends with somebody that parents were confusing them, I would explain to them that we love everyone. But, yeah, their lifestyle is just not adding up to your lifestyle, and that's not going to be healthy for you. So this is what's best for you, you know. We can respect them and love them and wish them the best and pray for them. But, no, you do not need to be influenced and, you know, all these things put into your – because this is not how we live. This is not what we do.
Let me ask this question then in the context of what you all are saying. I'm a teacher. Place me in the role of the teacher now. St. Louis, what should be the limits of my expression and my influence if I have a different view than the average parent of my classroom? Do I dress a certain way? Do I only speak a certain way? Or do I have the freedom or the luxury of, you know, being an influence on. Teachers have always been an influence on their students. Right, St. Louis?
Parents should demand that the teachers come to the classroom dressed appropriately. No female comes to the classroom with a skirt that stops mid-thigh. If they can't do that, then they got to go. It's simple.
Yeah.
You got to go.
What about my pants? Should my pants be too tight?
Men should not be coming to the classroom with pink hair, eyeliner, and lipstick on. And nails.
Wait a minute now. Wait now. Okay. I'm listening to you guys.
And purses.
Pathwaller, any comment on that? You still there? I know you're listening. What say you to that? Can you hear me, Brother Preacher? Okay, maybe he's muted his phone. All right. Perhaps when he gets back with us, here's the point that I want to focus on here, and this is the question that I really want to get to. In the context of what we're talking about, because what I'm suggesting to you, it is professional politicians as opposed to advocates. Who do you identify political scientists as most? And this is a question posed to each of you. As politicians or advocates? Those people that engage in the process of political science for votes.
Well, a politician is supposed to be an advocate. That's what they're supposed to be. Now, what they are is something totally different.
Interesting. Okay. Would you agree with that, St. Louis, that they're supposed to be an advocate?
Politicians are averse in political science. But see,
yes,
people
sir.
Are supposed to have an issue that they want to have addressed.
Right.
Come together around town hall meetings. Then, when they become agreeable with the direction they want, then amongst them, they choose somebody to fund and elect to represent them at the state house. And they're supposed to go there to address the issue that they decided on. That's the way the politician is supposed to work. Politicians are not supposed to go to the state house and say, I'm going to vote my heart. No. You vote the will of the constituents that elected you and that you represent. That's it.
But it doesn't go that way a lot of times. And sadly, we have two things. We have what he just said, and we have what I like. And I like advocacies.
Okay. So Josh, let me offer this contrast to go with what you and St. Louis said. Consider this. An advocate is one that may be involved in the political process, but they support and recommend a policy or particular set of policies that best benefit everybody involved in the end, versus a politician who is a person who has professional interest in the political process because they're interested in maintaining their power and control in office, right? And they use manipulative devices and methods to control and ultimately get a number of votes. What they're looking for is if you get into a race, you really should determine, the first thing you should determine is how many votes do you need to win in a given race. A professional politician, that's their primary goal, is to hit that vote number. Not necessarily what's best for all of the people. And so they will lie.
That's why I do not like those. I do not like those.
That's because the people allow that to happen. Now, if you got people who don't care about that, then here's your other choice. Move.
Okay.
Get away from there. And see, here's the thing. You hear in black community, they say, well, the black professionals, they move out the community. Well, because the community are acting in a behavior, and especially a voting pattern, that's detrimental to them. So they're going to leave.
Okay. So those are the driving forces behind that behavior. I say it like this. One robbed the bank, another drove the getaway car. That's when it comes to, in some regards, to both parties. And that's the most respectful way I have to say it. But young people have learned to model this competitive behavior in terms of gain, right? They see grown people essentially taking sides and identifying by color, right? And in their mind, hey, I'm justified in being down with my set, right, calling it like I see it, and doing my thing. They do it. Why not me? You understand what I'm saying, Josh? Hey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anybody.
And nowadays, there are so many gangs, and now we see that they turn gang members at like 14, 13. I mean,
sure.
They do it so early in life, and then they keep it.
Well, so there are other factors. There are other variables, Josh, to that. See, when you have young people who lack, and it's something we've been talking about a lot, the promise, the protection, and the responsible care of a caregiver, right, a custodial parent, such that they go to the street, so-called friends, looking for love in all the wrong places, it's easy for them to get caught up in all that. You see what I mean?
Look,
and there are a lot of
things
that young
people
even understand. Go ahead, Tano.
You know the reason why these gangs exist? Simply, you don't have any men. You don't have no men in the community. Men will kick off in these gang members, but either you're going to straighten up or you're going to get out. And the process that you have to create men is not and don't and was not meant to work that way. That's why you got complete chaos. And once again, those that's on the up and up, they leave, they move. And sooner or later, that's all you got. You got women that's trying to raise boys and males into men, and it ain't working. If it was working, this would not be a conversation.
I disagree. I disagree with that statement.
Why?
Nowadays, they can do whatever they want, but male of the house. So, but
what?
Finally, he just got to go.
Yeah. Okay, Josh, do you hear what St. Louis is saying? He's basically that when there are men not only in the streets but in their houses and they collectively come together for that's for the community or the neighborhood, right? Then they establish a social order that does not tolerate that behavior from young people or old people. You know, that's what I'm paraphrasing what he's saying, but in essence, that's what he's talking about.
When your country is being invaded, when your country is being invaded, you call what? Oh, the organized, cohesive army. When your neighborhood is being invaded, you call together a organized, cohesive bunch of men who's going to go out and protect the neighborhood. Going to protect it so that their children can walk to school without being feared of getting shot.
Right.
See, here's the thing.
Right.
It depends on who the gang member fear the most.
Mm.
See, They don't fear
you
because there is no men in the community. 70%
right.
or more
right.
of the household is ran by a single female. It was not designed to be like that. And when you try to do things other words than what was designed, that's been tried, proved, and tested for since humankind, then things don't work. It even works that way in nature. Insects,
wow.
animals,
wow.
fowl,
okay.
that's the way it works.
Yeah. And, you know, St. Louis, that was really the essence of what Cleaver, Elders Cleaver and the founders of the Panthers were trying to accomplish when they first started. They were trying to establish some sort of protection and order and looking out for the best interests of young folk in California, out there, the Watts area. And it kind of, you know, that thing spiraled and took on a different characteristic, perhaps, than what they initially intended for it to be. They did the same thing in Chicago, the group called the Vice Lords, the original group. That was their whole intent. They were trying to take care of the West Side, Roosevelt area over there in Chicago, and it just got spiraled into destructive, all kind of things. But again, when grown people and when people you look to for leadership, there's a breakdown in leadership because people are just interested in political power, not leadership. That's what you tend to have a result of. It is what it is, though. It is what it is. We've been talking from the conversation, political science. What's behind my destruction?
Oh.
Go ahead, Joshua.
Oh.
Go ahead, Joshua.
I'm just saying, even if you're divorced or whatever, you mm-hmm. can still be close to both.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Oh, father yes. and your mother, and still have that connection. And
sure, you can.
Still have a background.
You're right. And I would argue you should, Josh. Not only can you, but you should. Even if you're divorced, you should. You know, in the interest of the children. In the interest of the children. That's the missing piece. St. Louis, you're spot on with terms of gang violence and this destruction and what have you, particularly throughout urban America. There is an absence of fatherhood and family and faith, I would argue. Those three ingredients right there, faith, family, and fatherhood, ought to be prevalent, you know, and the norm. But unfortunately, there are a number of reasons which we don't have time to go into tonight. But that's the causation. That's the end result of it. That's the end result of it. So, man, wow. Wow. Pastor Wally, you still there?
Oh, yeah. Pastor yeah, Wally, still here.
Okay. Let me give you, we got a few minutes. We got about 10 minutes. Do you want to weigh in before we wrap up for tonight in some of the discussions we've had?
You know, what I'd like to say is that, you know, evil exists as well as good. It didn't just start 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. It's in there because it's made known in the Bible. It said that the enemy comes to see who he may devour. He said he goes about like a roaring lion, seeking who he may devour. And he has met. And then when you find out, coming up to speed where we are right today, it still exists.
Mm-hmm.
And in spite of how good one may think they are, evil does exist. And what am I saying? Oh. Let's just go and go according to what the word does say. It says in such a simple form that we may come to our senses and escape the snare, the trap of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. So if a person is innocent and someone come and capture that person or the people, that's evil. And
okay.
then innocent people started to do the will of the enemy. So when you talk about politics, you talk about politics.
Politics.
You know, I mean, it's like, you know, whoever holds the key is the one supposed to be calling the shots, like it or not. The one that lost is not going to be calling the shots, according to what the confusion come in at. If a person think it's confusion, or do they think that it's I won and I call the shots. You lost, you follow what I say. And so that's where all this rigmarole come in at. But when you keep it real simple and go to the one that it says, take it to the Lord, who's going to select to do that? Do anybody believe that the Lord is able? And then, if so, go to him. But if not, keep trying to fix it yourself. And then I turn it back over to you on this note, because it does say this. Whosoever trusts in his own heart is a fool. But whosoever walks wisely shall be delivered. So I understand what the trap is like. I understand what it's like to be innocent. I understand what it's like to be captured by the man. You know, if you put some bait out there on somebody and you know good well that you're doing it with the intent to do harm, and it works, that's captivity. And it's going on. It's happening. And whom better to capture than innocent young people having so much fun in the community, no matter where it is? I've seen rich and wealthy folks acting a plum fool.
What?
Killing their own parents, doing all kind of stuff. And they have both parents, a man and the woman there, the father and the mother there, and kill them both.
Right.
I've seen all this stuff. I'm pretending like it does not happen, because it does. And they're wealthy with money in a neighborhood where they ain't around none of this, what they're talking about. But here you got innocent people, you know, coming up, can go knock on the door like Joshua was talking about earlier. That's where we was at, talking about knocking on your neighbor's door with an excitement, not even having the door locked, just say, come on in. What's wrong with bringing back them good old days? Glory to God.
Wow.
You know, how do you do it? How do you do it?
Right.
You have to make sure you make a stand. You make a stand and you make a command that you're not going to continue to settle for what it is that you put out there. That is to put bait to trap innocent people. And that's what's happening.
Wow.
That's just the way it is. Wow. And if a person is not going to wake up, they'll stay asleep. You know, but if you're awake, don't go back to sleep. Don't go back to sleep because somebody trying to put you to sleep like as if nothing can be done about it. It is a solution to the problem.
Yeah.
But as long as we talk about the problem, stay in the problem, and stick with the problem, let the problem do what it's been doing, it'll always be that problem. But get to the flip side and watch what happens. The solution is there. The solution is there. But some people are just afraid of the solution because they like to talk. They like talking rights. They like to talk that talk, but no action. I don't like the small talk. I'd rather have action. Give me somebody with action, and I roll with that. I'll follow you if you got action.
Right.
But don't be dull and talk, man. I don't be digging all that talk, man. You know what I mean? When there ain't no action to it.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's where I'm at.
Well, stand right there, Pastor. Let me get a final thought from my last two callers here that's online with us. St. Louis, you want to kick us off there with a final thought before we cut out here tonight?
Well, as I said before, the 50 countries that we call states are sovereign, and the federal government has no more power over them than what those states allow.
Okay.
The federal government gets its powers from the states, and the states need to say, this is what we're going to do. You take back that land that the federal government calls federal land, because they have no constitutional authority to own land in that particular fashion. If you want to state, if you want to exploit the natural resources on that land, that's your ability to do. It's your natural resources. If you want to sell those natural resources, and then if you want to give royalties to every citizen in the state, like Alaska does, that's your responsibility to do. The federal government, and if you don't want to pay taxes, to the federal government. You tell them we ain't paying taxes that's going to go for that.
What?
We're not paying tax. And the federal government is not to be bringing illegals, flying them into your state, across your state borders in the wee hours of the morning, and you don't know nothing about it.
Okay. Wow. I hate that we our time is getting away from. Thank you, man. I appreciate that for you joining us in the night there. Okay. Well, let me, Josh, give me a final, if you could do so briefly, Josh, a final word before we get ready to cut out of here. You there, Josh?
The Lord is my shepherd; I shall not want. He lies me down in the shepherd, and that is it.
All right. Thank you, man. Thank y'all very much. Wow. We've been talking from the topic, political science, what's behind my destruction. Great conversation. Pastor, I'm going to throw it to you. This thing is hot, man. You got it, man. I'm throwing it to you now. This thing is hot.
And just to elaborate on what Joshua said, when the Lord become your shepherd, there's a certain thing that you can do in the fire. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Verse 5 says, he's prepared a table before me in the presence of my enemy. When the Lord prepares something, that's when it works.
I see.
That's why
he
says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, because he prepared a table for a person, you know, in the presence of their enemies. See, there are enemies.
I see.
If we get that the table, man, what he put on the table, everything's going to be all right. I yield back to you on that note.
Episode ago. My goodness. Good grace of the Lord. We'll be back next Tuesday for another episode of Talk Straight. Thank you, Pastor Wild, our co-host, and our callers there for joining us here. We'll see y'all next Tuesday. We're going to end with, don't call me brother if you don't mean it. You know what I'm saying? Don't do that. The OJs. We'll see you next Tuesday, 7 o'clock, for another episode of Talk Straight.
That's right.
What y'all say? If you don't mean
how can you do it when you keep